Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you being with us, getting up with us nice and early.
Oh, with you, so nice of you.
10 o'clock. It is really nice of them to get up with us and keep us company on a Wednesday morning where we're turning the page on last Sunday's game and we're starting to look ahead to this Sunday's game. And amazingly enough, it's an even tougher defense the Texans are playing on Sunday. But we're excited. There's football this weekend. And Seth, how are you this morning?
I'm good. Yeah, sometimes I feel like the only thing getting some of our listeners to work on time is that they feel obligated to us first and foremost. Mm. Sure, you might have some job as an air traffic controller or something, but who gives a damn about those people?
Right.
You're responsible for Sean and I.
That's right.
And you know that if you don't get up and listen to us, then we'll be out of a job.
Do you think that the radio.com rewind feature has made fewer and fewer people get up early with us in the morning?
It's true. We might be hurting workplace productivity because people are saying, like, ah. I got to get up at 6 a.m. Yeah. to listen to Sean first and foremost, but then also because I'm a flood control expert.
Right.
And and they're like, priorities. Ah, whatever. I'll handle the floods and everything else later. I'll listen to Sean and Seth on Rewind.
That's right. I need to know what they're saying about the Steelers pass rush at 6:01. There is something about listening to things live where there is a, hey, what could happen in this moment kind of thing. But either way, we appreciate you getting up early. Download the radio.com app, an early reminder to do that if you're not up at 6 o'clock on certain mornings. You want to rewind, listen to the show, you can. Seth, Pittsburgh week is officially here now. You and I turn the page a little later than a lot of folks do on the game because we only get 2 hours on Monday to chop it up. So we still have so much stuff left over from the game on Sunday. Well, it's fun. It's fun when they win. But on a game like Sunday, it's like extending an autopsy. You know what I mean? Like, I really would like to just chop up this body and get this over with, but we take it into Tuesday.
That Monday show where we only get 2 hours, it feels like I just bought a sports car, but then I have to let the valet drive it around for a while. Yeah, like, okay, no, I want you to, you're going to bring me my car, and then also you're going to drive me home, and you're going to get to go around the sharp corners and everything.
I'm picturing Mark Vandermeer and John Harris meeting us out at the front of a restaurant like a valet driver. They're the ones who take the keys at 8 o'clock in the morning.
I pulled that out right away.
Yep, indeed. But it is Pittsburgh week, and speaking of Mark Vandermeer and John Harris, they do the coaches show with Bill O'Brien, and I think this is probably a theme. This is from Bill O'Brien's coaches show, Seth, and I'm curious, as a former player, you've been on teams before that have started slow. Just how much of a rally the troops MO, how much of a rally the troops messages they're going on inside the building, because according to Bill O'Brien, there is a big lack of belief outside of the building.
Yeah, I mean, I just think there's a lot when you watch. I think for us inside, we watch the tape and we know there's a lot that we can improve on, a lot that the players will see that they know they can improve on that carries over to the game. You know, it is what it is. We know that, you know, people probably aren't real happy with us outside the building. There's really nothing we can do about that. Really, we can just come in here and go to work and do the best we can to put together a good game plan and have a great week and go up there and play well against Pittsburgh, because that's what it's going to take.
Seth, does the message depend on what kind of 0-2 team you are? And what I mean by that is there are 0-2 teams that are just bad football teams. There are 0-2 teams that are just young football teams. I feel like the Texans are an 0-2 football team that's a decent football team that's just doing a lot. They're a decent football team that's played two really good football teams, but they've shot themselves in the foot in a lot of ways these first couple games with a lot of mistakes that are hopefully correctable for them.
Yeah, I think the big difference between weeks 1 and 2, I think, was that in week 1, they just got their asses beat. In week two, they shot themselves in the foot, and they didn't. Look, the Ravens are a better football team. I'm not sitting here saying that it was the Texans losing more than it was the Ravens winning. The Ravens forced them into errors. You know, Kiki QT didn't just cough that ball up because he was switching hands or something. He had it forced out of his hands. But there were more correctable mistakes in week two. There were more correctable mistakes, and yet they still ultimately really weren't in that game in the second half. That's the big problem. When O'Brien says that they realize people outside the stadium probably aren't happy with him, I saw that Landry had written when he emailed that clip out to everybody that he thought that was noteworthy. I wasn't quite sure why that was noteworthy.
Yeah, well, I think that was Tyler who typed that said, "Oh, In the Loop is going to like this." Yeah, they In the Loop likes that kind of stuff. That's red meat for them. And you know, what O'Brien's thinking about outside the building. Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes people are obsessed with whether or not the team is hearing the criticism or not. And it always bothers me. Like, it annoys me because it paints out, like, the entire team as all listening to the same stuff. This is how it happens on a football team. Some guys read the paper or read the internet or read social media, and some guys don't. Some guys actively go out and search for their names and want to know what people are saying about them. Some guys are completely ignorant of it. I think what O'Brien just said there was that's just common sense. Yeah, you lose two games in convincing fashion, and people are going to be unhappy about it. As a football coach, or any kind of coach these days, high school, basketball, football, it doesn't matter. One thing you have to be very conscious of is that no matter what you tell your team in the meeting room, they've got, you know, 16 hours a day or a little bit less, a little bit more, where they're getting texts from their friends and family. People are forwarding them stuff on social media. It's absolutely impossible to live in an information silo anymore and to keep your team unaware of what's going on the outside. So I think that's just something you manage by just trying to keep guys focused on the stuff that they know and that they care about. And you just genuinely have to try to ignore the noise as much as possible.
What kind of player were you when it came to listening to the outside noise?
I would go, when I would go on information diets, it was largely the same as how I've been with actual diets for most of my life. I binge. I binge diet and then I binge eat.
Right.
So I would binge.
There's no in between with you.
Yes. I would binge information diet where I'd be completely ignorant of anything going on in the outside world. But then every now and then you make that mistake. Maybe you search your own name when you're drunk or something, and then it opens up the floodgates. That's the equivalent of ordering three pan pizzas.
Well, there was no social media, not to make you feel old, but there was no social media really when you were a player. You retired in 2007. You know, Twitter was just in its infancy at that point, and I don't think people were going on Facebook and share. There were message boards and things like that. What did you listen to Sports Radio 610? Did you read the paper?
I listened to Sports Radio 610, which was cool because, like, Lance Zierlein always liked me a lot because the morning show at 610 a.m. has always been the spot to go.
Right.
So Lance knows line play, and Lance liked me a lot. So I always got very fair treatment from the 610 a.m. morning show.
Right.
That wasn't like a source of stress necessarily listening to that.
Yeah.
You know what we did have? We had the message boards back in the day.
Yeah.
So there wasn't social media yet.
Did you have a burner account on a Texans message board?
I never did, but I can't remember there was like 1 year where I first discovered message boards, and I remember I kind of became like a junkie for a while just going through and reading.
Yeah, I don't even
comment.
Want to know. Yes, you know, yeah. you and message boards back when they were in their infancy, like you were like a tweaker out in the alley probably with five syringes hanging out of your forearm.
No, because I knew it was bad for me. You start really, because you read all these, you know, you read all the criticism and it's like so often it's just completely errant, you know, it's just completely wrong. So you realize, okay, well, I can't be letting this pollute my brain. So I wasn't like a Kevin Durant, like out there constantly obsessed with it and needing to know if some kid in Katy didn't like the way I played or something. I realize, okay, the people that pay my paychecks are the ones that those evaluations are the one I need to listen
to. That's exactly
right.
It's
that weird. For athletes, it's the same as it is for every other human where it's hard to avoid. It's like knowing social media does this. It's like if somebody came to you and said, hey, Sean, they're having a conversation about you in the room next door. Landry and Lopez are having a heated conversation about you. Here, you could listen to it. Should you do it? Like, it's almost impossible to say no. And athletes are no different than normal people.
I don't know. There's a lot of times where I'm like, let them talk. I don't want to know what they're saying about. One of them's probably saying mean things about me.
You've gotten to that point now, too. Yeah, no, I so actively avoid gossip to the point where now I'm rude. Trying to, like, just absolutely want – people start telling some gossip to me, and I'm like, listen, man, I don't want to know.
Same.
I don't want to know. I'm just going to go blithely on my merry way. And that's how sports teams should ideally be, is just go blithely on your way where you only get the information you need to know.
Speaking of information, what is the betting market saying about the Texans in this game and for the season? There is one bet that I'm thinking – about backing them on. I don't know if you people out there are going to agree with me. I don't know if Seth Payne's going to agree with me. We'll find out next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday morning. Good to be with you. Thank you for getting up with us. So, Seth, I don't know if you've looked at the line for this game between the Texans and the Steelers. I was very surprised when it first came out. It's since been betted up slightly to the side of the Steelers. When this line first came out, I thought for sure it would be close to a touchdown. You know, the Texans were an 8-point, 8.5-point underdog to the Ravens by the time the game kicked off, and that was at NRG Stadium. Granted, in front of an empty NRG Stadium, but still in Houston. They got to sleep in their own beds, the Texans did. Now they travel to Pittsburgh, again, in front of an empty stadium, but still, it's a road trip. And I thought for sure that traveling to Pittsburgh that the Texans would be about a touchdown underdog to the Steelers on the road, because I don't think the Steelers are that far behind the Ravens. I think they're below the Ravens in the pecking order. But if you look at a lot of people's power rankings, this Steeler team, at least early on in the season, is thought to be, by and large, a top 5 or 6 team in the NFL. The Texans were only a 3.5-point underdog in Pittsburgh when that line opened. It's been bet up to 4 since then. But I'm really surprised that the line is that low on this game.
I think that the Steelers' defense is awesome. We know that. I think that the Steelers' offense is going to be one that continues to get better as the season goes along, and I think as Roethlisberger gets less and less rusty. But so far, it's not like they look like a juggernaut offensively. I mean, we just faced both the Ravens and the Chiefs, which are two of the scariest offenses you could face, especially in the regular season when both those teams are healthy. And the Steelers just simply aren't there yet. So, yeah, their defense is really good. But look, they beat the Giants, an awful team, by 10. They beat the Broncos, probably an awful team, by 5.
An awful team who lost their quarterback early in the game.
Yeah,
to your point, and the Broncos hung in there with them.
Right. So, yeah, I think that the Steelers are a better team than the Texans right now, but they're not firing on all cylinders yet. I don't want to make excuses for the Texans whatsoever, and I don't think Bill O'Brien is or any of the players there. But in terms of our perception of the team right now, I keep reminding myself, man, all right, Seth, settle the hell down a little bit, because they did just face, as Mike Tomlin said, probably the two best teams in the NFL right now.
Are we too close in some ways? Like, from that perspective, are we too close because we watch every single play so granularly? We see every single flaw in this team. And the NFL, at the end of the day, the NFL is really sometimes about having a 30,000-foot view of things and just looking at trends, forget about the matchups for a second. This should be a Texans team that is backed into a corner here and should come out swinging on Sunday, because they need to save their season at this point.
It's like when you're watching Altuve in a slump versus when somebody from another team is watching Altuve in a slump. Somebody from another team will say, like, oh, okay, well, he's a great hitter.
He's Altuve,
Let's talk about before this year. He's a great hitter, and, but, man, when you yourself as a batter are in a slump, or if a fan of the Astros is watching your guy in a slump, it feels like forever, and it feels like they're never going to get out of it. And that's what it feels. And then there's also this. We've gone through this whole offseason, right, where, like, we as fans have just been bombarded with all this criticism of Bill O'Brien and the team. And it's one of those strange situations where we agree with the criticism, and yet you get tired of hearing it. You know, you just get sick of hearing it all the time. I'm going on a podcast tonight out of Pittsburgh where I'm sure they're going to bring up a whole bunch of stuff about how dumb so many of the moves were in the offseason and what have you. And there's going to be a part of me that is like going to want to defend Bill O'Brien, even though I vehemently disagree with a lot of the moves that he made. It's just, you're so, it feels right now, so much of it feels like, oh crap, come on, man. It's happening exactly the way everybody was afraid it would happen.
Is part of it the phenomenon like in Animal House where they go, hey, they can't do that to our pledges, only we can do that to our pledges?
Yeah, yeah. Or like anybody in your family when right. you know your brother's a jackass, not my brother, but any, or your brother, Sean, but right. your hypothetical brother. But when somebody else says it, no, now those are fighting words.
We're family. Here's another way. I think I'm glad you mentioned the two opponents for the Steelers, because here's another way to put it. And you're right. When you lay it out, when you lay it out that way, Seth, that hey, here's who the Steelers have played so far, and they were actually in a tussle with a Denver team that was playing Jeff Driskel at quarterback for most of the game. That's a really good point. And to that point, the Texans, the Super Bowl odds come out every Tuesday after all the games are over the previous week. The Texans are. If you still have any confidence in the Texans winning the Super Bowl, you can get them at 100-1 right now to win the Super Bowl. Now, they are 7-1 to win the AFC South. And I will remind people that 2 years ago, they started out 0-3, and they wound up winning 9 in a row, and they won the AFC South. And 7-1 is not, to me, I look at it, I go, look, if they win this Sunday against Pittsburgh, now all of a sudden, you know, and if Tennessee, I don't know who Tennessee plays this weekend, like the season is not out of control yet. 7-1, I'm thinking about a little bit, but to put what you just said in a different fashion, the Texans are 0-2. They've played the Ravens and the Chiefs. Okay, they haven't looked good, but those are two really hard teams. The Steelers are 2-0. There are only 9 teams with longer Super Bowl odds than the Texans, or 8 teams. 2 of them are the Steelers' opponents so far this year. The only teams with longer Super Bowl odds than the Texans right now are Denver, Washington, Jacksonville, Miami, the Giants, the Panthers, the Bengals, and the Jets. The Broncos and the Giants are the two opponents the Steelers have played so far. So they've played two patsies so far, according to the
odds makers. Right, right. And again, I think that in those games, Ben Roethlisberger has made some big-time throws. The Steelers' defense was really good last year, so they're going to be really good again. Like, their numbers right now where, Sean, this is the freakish number. In going against porous offensive lines, of which the Texans are one of those right this moment, they have 3 guys on their defense who are in the top 6 in pressures in the NFL. Bud Dupree.
Hold up. Three in the top 6 in the entire league, you're saying?
Yes. 3 in the top 6 in pressures. So when you add up quarterback hits, quarterback hurries, and sacks, they've got 3 of those guys.
Who are they?
They are Bud Dupree, TJ Watt, and Stephon Tuitt, yeah.
The Irishman, yeah.
So Stephon Tuitt, like they get after the passer. The Texans, who
you didn't even say Cam Hayward. Cam Hayward got paid like 2 weeks ago. You didn't even mention his name. He's on there too.
That's why. By the way, the Steelers aren't trading for J.J. Watt. Right. They got all the interior defensive linemen and edge pass rushers they need. And everything. We talked about that kind of like half like jokingly as a hypothetical. And I saw a couple people actually got worked up over it. If somebody trades for J.J. Watt, I don't think it's going to be the Steelers.
Yeah.
But unless TJ says that's part of like his new contract or something, so
gotta trade for my Hall of Fame brother.
They look, it's a really good pass rushing team. Oh, and they're going against a Texans team who, as Sarah Barshop tweeted out yesterday, the Texans offensive line is 31st in pass blocking win rate.
Ah.
So regardless of whether it results in a sack or a pressure or anything.
Yeah.
They're losing more one-on-one battles than all but one team in the NFL.
Yeah. I would take 31st if it were college football where there's 130 teams. Hey, 31st, upper quarter. 31st out of 32 teams? Not good. Not good at all. No.
That's what I asked Sarah Barshop, actually, to confirm that there are only 32 teams in the NFL.
And?
I was crossing my fingers that maybe the COVID had changed something and they let more teams in or something.
There's more teams during the coronavirus.
Yeah, no, there's still only 32 teams in the NFL.
All right. So Seth has concerns. Those are just a couple of them. He has begun scouting this game. His biggest concerns for a game that really, quite honestly, is probably full of them based on how the Texans have played so far this year. Seth Payne's biggest concerns for this game on Sunday are next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Good to be with you. Sean Pendergast, original Texan Seth Payne. The Steelers are hosting the Texans on Sunday, noon kickoff. So we're back to a slew of noon kickoffs. The first two games, we had a Thursday night game. We had a late start on Sunday. I think the Texans, Seth, I'm pretty sure they are all noon kickoffs the rest of the season as of right now, because even their Thursday game that they've got later this season is Thanksgiving Day, and it's the early game at 11:30 in the morning. So, I guess for people who care, which I would imagine two morning hosts care deeply about all their duties being wrapped up by 6:30 at night on a Sunday, this will be the first noon kickoff of the year. Seth and I will have you on Texans Countdown starting at 9 a.m. here on Sports Radio 610.
You know what I will say, though, Sean? I have to remember, sometimes I'm spoiled because I've got the Sunday ticket. And I get the Sunday ticket for free, by the way. That's one of the perks. Yeah,
Hold up. As a former player, you get the Sunday ticket for free?
Yes, and a lot of guys, like, they want health care for life or health insurance or whatever. No. I get my Sunday ticket for free. So I've got the Sunday ticket, and look, I'm not here, you know, bragging about it. Like, I'm a big shot. I get it for free. I'm not paying for it. Sometimes I forget what it's like when you watch the noon game, and then on local television, like, one network decides not to show the late game, and then another network decides to show the Cardinals versus the Jets or some weird game like that.
Yeah.
Like, how miserable your late afternoon is.
Yeah.
Seth, I feel bad for the people that don't have a free Sunday ticket.
This is no disrespect to you personally. We know that at times the owners have gotten over on the players in CBA negotiations, and I'm picturing the conversation surrounding the Sunday ticket where the players are like, nope, we want 49% of the revenue, and the owner's like, how about 48% and we'll give you free Sunday ticket for the rest of your life. Deal! I'll take it!
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's funny. All right. You have some concerns about this game on Sunday. Just looking at the rundown, I'm surprised I still have storage left on my computer with the number of concerns you have.
I've got concerns, but I'm going to be honest with you. And I went about it this way. I said, all right, let me go through and watch the game again. And along the way, I'm going to pick out the things that I think could really be their undoing versus the Steelers or any other team if they don't get these things fixed. But I also, as I was doing this, it reminded me, all right, man, they made some progress in a few areas, the tackling, some of the things offensively. So, I mean, I'm trying to get myself psyched up for this game, and in doing so, I'm realizing there are some things they can build on from these last two
good
games.
Deal.
As miserable as they were, there were a few good things.
Let's hear it. Let's go.
So, let's start off with the diminutive elephant in the room. Kiki Qtee.
What's little
to be
baby
done about
elephant.
Kiki Qtee? I think a lot of people, you know, myself included, after he fumbled in that game, you know, pretty much single-handedly took the Texans out of that game. Your thought is, okay, back to the doghouse with you. You're going to be inactive next week. Then we're done with you, Kiki Qtee. But I don't think you can afford to do that. For one, you don't know what Will Fuller's going to be doing on Sunday.
Yeah.
Even if he's healthy, you can't, even when Will Fuller is completely healthy, you can't plan on him finishing out a game. Kiki Qtee needs to be a part of this game plan because he has a certain quick twitch about him that nobody else on that field shows in the shorter areas of the field. Even Brandon Cooks, who showed up as a deep threat in that game last week, it's not quite as scary when you see them in the short area and in the slot type movements as it is when Kiki Qtee is out there.
You know, the need to have Kiki Qtee on the field is disconcerting considering how much they spent on Randall Cobb this
offseason. Yeah. I'll get to Randall Cobb a little bit later because he did one really good veteran savvy thing in this game.
Okay.
But when I watch Randall Cobb move versus when I watch Kiki Qtee move, okay, Kiki Qtee makes me nervous. When he's going on a jet sweep action, as I'm a defensive back, I'm gonna have to beat my feet to try to keep up with him across the formation. He's faster, hash mark to hash mark, than anybody else on the team.
Yeah,
which used to not matter at all, but now it matters with all the jet sweep stuff.
I would agree with that. By the way, I just want to mention here, you mentioned Will Fuller. I would imagine a Fuller update will be coming later this morning, and we are carrying Bill O'Brien's press conference today at 9:30 during the show. So just want to mention that. If you want to circle it on the calendar, you can listen to it on the radio.com app when you get to work. Seth, continuing, concerns for Sunday.
And these first few concerns all kind of fall into the variety of the cleanup in aisle three. Somebody spilled the milk, and they shouldn't have spilled the milk. But for the love of God, and Jack Easterby, go clean this mess up before it goes any further, because these are the basics. So with Kiki QT, it's the ball security. It's some of these little things. But he is doing some good things. The offensive line handling simple movement. Sean, I can't tell you, these last 2 weeks, I've watched the offensive line just give absolute Christmas presents to some defensive linemen. There, you call it a game, like a twist, or when the tackle goes first and the end comes underneath, a TE game. These are called games. They're not blitzes, but they're when the defensive linemen are doing movements, of deceptive movements on their own up front to try to confuse the offensive linemen. And frankly, sometimes it feels like a lost cause because they're relatively easy to figure out for good offensive lines. These guys are the Texans. They're getting beat so quickly and so thoroughly on some of these defensive line games. It looks like they've never been part of a pass rush drill before. I cannot figure it out. They just act like they're responsible for one guy for the entire down, and that's it. I really don't get it. I don't understand how they could look so lost sometimes. And as a defensive lineman, I'm jealous, because if I faced an offensive line like that 16 times a year, I might have had 27 sacks in a season. That's how easy they make it for some of these guys. And I was not a good pass rusher. But when the defensive end is knifing down and it opens up the path to the quarterback for a 330-pound guy, that's what they're doing. And I do think that some of their rules or their keys must be a little bit too confusing. This goes back into the territory of just simplify. You cannot keep getting gashed by such idiotically simple things and expect to beat good football teams. So go back to whatever the rules were in high school or something where these kids know how to sort this stuff out.
Seth, how does that happen? Because the one thing that this offensive line did well last year, statistically at least, was pass block. They weren't great in the run game, but they pass blocked really, really well. And it's the same five guys that were doing it well last year. What is it, focus?
I don't know. I think at least part of it, and this is what I hope, some of it in these first 2 weeks, it almost looks like they're trying too hard to be physically dominating, which is a bad thing to do as an offensive lineman in the NFL. Like this infatuation with pancake blocks and everything, it doesn't matter, man. It's like get your guy blocked,
get your guy
taken care of, and then be sure that you're taking care of other threats. And you know, in the first game, Laremy Tunsil had a snap where the Texans O-line had picked up the blitz perfectly well, but then Tunsil decided that he wanted to put a kill shot on the defensive end who was down inside, and Tunsil basically took out the entire left side of the protection by hitting the guard, the center, the defensive end, the defensive tackle.
He blocked everybody.
Including
his teammates.
It opened up a clear path for the loop and contain guy on the defensive line to get there. So it's just sometimes you can do more by doing less, and I think that's what they have to do, because these mistakes are like above and beyond mental errors. They're just complete wholesale abandonment of fundamentals, and you can't beat the Baltimore
it's
Ravens.
It's stuff
by
that if it were a real life task, you would do when you were drunk. Like where did I put my keys? You know, and they're 5 feet away from you on the counter, or something like that.
Yeah, so counterintuitively, I think my advice to the Texans O-line might be stop trying so hard.
Yeah.
Just get back to basics. This is simple stuff. Discipline, again, this is the stuff that should be simple that the Texans are messing up and hurting themselves with. Ross Blacklock getting ejected from that game. Look, the Texans were going to lose the game by that point. Partly because, like, on this play, even before Blacklock got ejected, he just got absolutely crushed on a double team. This is what I need Blacklock to understand. And he'd gotten crushed on a double team earlier in the game, too. I mean, he got thrown out of the bar. He's having his welcome to the NFL moment. He's realizing, like, oh, man, I ain't in Kansas, literally, anymore. Like, you're not playing K-State, baby. Like, you're playing actual offensive linemen now. And it's like every now and then, you know what's going to happen in the NFL? Sometimes you're going to get embarrassed. J.J. Watt, happens to him. Sometimes J.J. Watt gets dunked on, you know. Sometimes J.J. Watt gets baptized in the river and gets bent over backwards. It's going to happen. This is what happens when you go against full-grown men. Don't lose your composure and start flailing around and pull a Bruno Giacomini where you're a tough guy after the snap. A tough guy during the play itself.
That's about as rough a name as you could invoke on somebody. It is tough, though. Seth, you played defensive line. that's one of those positions that to me is, it's a lot like being a baseball player, right? Where if you're in baseball and you get a hit 30% of the time, you're super successful. You're a Hall of Famer. I feel like defensive line is one of those positions, especially if you're rushing the passer, where you're really only successful along the defensive line. The good defensive linemen are successful still a very small percentage of the plays. You're the position that's set up for failure more so than the offensive line.
Right. Well, but I guess what I'm talking about, I'm not talking about not making a play. I'm talking about these plays where he really got his butt kicked.
Yeah.
Like, that's, it's embarrassing. Like, when you go, and honestly, like, usually it didn't happen at all in college when you get to the NFL as a defensive lineman. And then there's going to be times, especially rookie year, where you really get punked, you know? And that's just life. That's life in the NFL. Don't lose your composure and start punching people over it. You gotta just work on being better during the actual down itself, before you go. Look, the only guys allowed to do what Blacklock did is Antonio Smith. Yeah. Antonio Smith could have swung his helmet at somebody once a week, every week, and I would have been okay with it.
Because he can overcome it with charisma. Yes, 100%. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. We're continuing Seth's concerns for the Texans against the Steelers. You're going through some ones that are, it sounds like, Seth, are very clean-upable here. Do you have any more that fit that category?
I would say, oh, yeah, the snap count. I don't even need the offensive lineman to not false start. All right, let's start with baby steps. Stop acting like the officials are out to get you when they call you for a false start that you definitely committed.
Right.
These guys argue with the officials, and I, for the love of God, I have no idea. The only thing I can think is that maybe the defensive line is using a dummy count or something, which is against the rules, but it's hard to, it doesn't get enforced. It's really hard for the officials to say, like, oh yeah, that loud noise was simulating a snap count. That's the only thing I can think of as to why Tunsil or Titus Howard would act like they didn't false start when they totally did. Now, I'm also going to say it's not always their fault. Sometimes it's been Nick Martin's fault because he's late with the snap. Sometimes it's Zach Fulton. Again, this is all simple stuff, though, that should be cleaned up. I can't sit here and watch the Texans stall out on drives because you can't get the snap count or the silent count right. Especially when you can't get the silent count right in a stadium that has no noise
whatsoever.
Yeah,
that's just going to say there's no noise in the stadium.
Can I add that to the list, too? CBS. Get your act together. I can't tell you how dismayed I was when I went back to watch the TV copy. Because
yeah.
Sean and I were lucky enough to be in the building and watch, and it was very, very quiet. The TV copy was horrendous in terms of the crowd noise.
Yeah.
It's like whoever was in charge of the crowd noise was asleep at the switch.
Yeah,
there was no noise. There was hardly a response. And when there was a response, it was like 4 seconds too late.
Yeah.
I felt like I was watching minor league European soccer or something.
It was wild.
What the hell was that?
It was wild. All right, Seth's concerns for the Texans on Sunday. Seth, I know that there is a slow start concern that you have. In fact, let's hear Bill O'Brien from his press conference earlier this week talk about not the slow starts on the offense, but in the second half of that Ravens game defensively.
Good, obviously. You know, we've given up a lot of rushing yardage in the last 2 weeks, and it's just not very good. I think that we just have to go back and figure it out, and we got to have a good week. We got to improve. We got to work hard to improve. But yeah, it's the run defense has to improve.
All right, so the run defense has not been great. I thought it was much better against the Ravens. I thought the Ravens got the lion's share of their yards, Seth, when the game was a little out of hand, a couple long runs that kind of skewed the numbers a little bit. When this game was still contestable, I'll call it, the Texans, I thought, did a really good job defending the run, especially considering who the trigger man is and the whole thing with Lamar Jackson. But that eight and a half minute drive to begin the third quarter felt a lot like that drive in the first quarter of the Kansas City game where the Chiefs kind of wore the Texans defense down to a nub.
Right, and as far as the run defense goes in that, that's one of the correctable things. I was kind of picking on Ross Blacklock earlier, but a lot of these younger guys that are playing well for the most part, they need to be more disciplined in staying in their gaps. The fast start, I know it's a frustrating one for fans to hear, and I actually got an email from one of my lawyer guy up there in the Woodlands about this. Like, hey, I'm tired of hearing about fast starts or forcing turnovers or doing whatever. How do you actually do it? And it's a really good question. And sometimes I think coaches are at a loss. Hey, I don't think Bill O'Brien.
I asked O'Brien the question the other day, and he didn't have an answer.
Now, when it comes to these defensive slow starts in the third quarter, which really have been maybe an undertold part of the story here, it's that when you're down, but then the defense is on the field for 8 or 9 minutes to begin the second half, all of a sudden, man, that puts so much more pressure. Even if there's no score, but there has been a score, but even if there's no score, it just limits the number of possessions your offense has to come back. They got to get better at that. This is the one thing that I would say, and I think that Weaver might be able to control this better by being a little bit more aggressive. When you have a team backed up on the 10-yard line or the 5-yard line, right, like in the Kansas City game, there's a tendency for defensive coordinators to say, hey, look, the chances of an offense pulling off a 90-yard drive are pretty damn small, so we're just going to go ahead and play conservative and let the offense mess up at some point, somewhere along the way. I think that's a fine philosophy if you're playing the Cleveland Browns. I don't think you can go into any series versus teams in the modern NFL that have good offenses and good quarterbacks and say, well, they're not going to be efficient enough and make every short pass or make every run a productive run enough to make a 90-yard drive. So we're going to play conservative at the beginning. I think you got to hit them in the mouth hard and fast. With the Ravens game, they did not call a blitz or a dog. They didn't send anybody extra in the first 5 plays, and they didn't do that. They didn't walk a safety into the box until 3rd and 1, which is a pretty common sense time to walk a safety up into the box. So I think that you can be more aggressive. You got them down, pinned down the 10. Bring some heat early on. Get it going. I'd rather, look, as a defensive lineman who tends to get tired, we do, us big fellas, I'd rather take the risk of letting up a big play that gets them to the 50 than for them to get to the 50 by seven plays that end up fatiguing me. Now, in the Kansas City game, they actually opened up the first play of the second half with a safety blitz, and it didn't work out. But then they got conservative again after that. I'd like to see Weaver be more aggressive at the beginning of the second half.
Big Ben is in better condition this year, and he is definitely very slippery in the pocket. But he, especially compared to these first two quarterbacks he played, Seth, he's somebody that if you do decide to blitz, he should be there. He should, whenever the blitzer arrives, they shouldn't be surprised as to whether or not Ben Roethlisberger will be there. He should be there. He's just a gigantic mountain of a human being who might slip out of your grasp.
Yeah, honestly, just watching this Ravens game and, you know, putting myself in the position of an outside linebacker at times when I'm thinking about, okay, this is how this guy's reacting to this run play. It's so stressful, man. Lamar Jackson makes everything so hard. And what the Ravens are really good at doing is when they use their tight ends in some of those Lamar Jackson runs, it's really hard to tell whether the tight end is coming to block you out, seal you in, or if he's releasing on a route.
Yep.
So, because they come so hard and so fast. The Ravens tight ends are way better at that than the Texans tight ends. That's one thing where they could better exploit and use Deshaun Watson's running ability by the tight ends being more violent, faster, more deceptive in a lot of those actions that they use, Texans.
That's a really, really good one. All right, Seth, we got time for one more big concern in this game. Go for it.
I'd leave this on a little bit of a positive here. Yeah. I need to see me some more Jacob Martin, because Jacob Martin did something in this game.
100%.
It made he lessened my concerns about the run a lot.
He's now, decent.
He still has plays versus the run where he kind of gets ragdolled because he's a lighter guy. But the thing that's changed is he makes up for it now. He had a few really nice plays in this game where what I'm looking for with Jacob Martin isn't necessarily when he gets a sack or when he makes a big play. I want to see what he's doing on the plays where he's not showing up in the box score. Like, is he holding his ground? Is he sacrificing his body to bounce the play out? He did more of that in this game. He had 24 snaps in this game. After having, I believe, 16 the week before. Some of that's just based on situation. But I think they can trust Jacob Martin to start using him more in more obvious running situations.
Look, if he played to the level that he was described at in training camp, and he did flash in training camp, I was there, and Weaver and O'Brien could not stop complimenting him. He's not playing a snap count percentage commensurate with somebody who's getting the level of praise that he was getting. And you're right.
Yeah.
In the times that they used him in this Baltimore game, they used him in non-obvious passing situations, and I thought he held up well enough to where you got to put him out there. You know what I mean? You got to put him out there on the chance he might do something for you. All right, that was Seth Payne's concerns for the game against the Steelers on Sunday. We will continue to take you inside everything going on with this game on Sunday. That's what we do, the insider access, the exclusive content that we give you here. The Texans play here on Sports Radio 610. Speaking of, on Sunday against Baltimore, J.J. Watt had two sacks, two TFLs, three quarterback hits. None of those are the number that stood out to me at the end of the day. What is that number and what does it mean? We will tell you next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.